Let us take this opportunity to welcome you again and also apologize that I felt so bad when we had the start of this workshop and when the road accident fund was presented and the presentation also was by a woman. And unfortunately, we had to stop and ask me to come here. I just want to apologize again for that and also explain that there's nothing wrong that you have done on that day. It was not a question of degrees with you. We looked at the time available in that day and felt that we would not be trusted to do something. We needed more time to deal with the issue. But thank you very much for promoting your service that you are accepting our apology. Maybe for those women that say what's happening here, but that this woman not against the woman. That's not the truth. We promote you. And we support you. before we continue with this presentation, we would also want to highlight that we wanted to interact with prayer and worship. This is the RPMC. The RPMC, the Road Traffic Enforcement Agency. All our cars. This food is nice. When I go to the white in the Thailand, the month. Manta Wanga Coke. In a cat away for this quiet food. After your mind and coffee and bamba. We need what? No food is nice for a toilet. I was calling the water. Yay, yay. No, pulling lens. No, never pulling lens there, man. And yesterday, we spent a lot of time dealing with the Ola card. Somebody may be to ask for it too. But we have this Nabanda only, and we then asked that we come back today so that we can also deal with the RPMC. When we deal with RPMC, why we put you under this period to interact with this friend. We see a very close relationship between the three entities. What we actually see is that if RPMC and the people of South Africa were to behave correctly, there was going to be no need for the road traffic infringement agency and the road accident fund. Or, let me put it the other way around, there would be less money spent on the the traffic in infringement agency as well as the road accident fund. Now, before we start, I want us to have a common understanding of what is it that we are trying to respond to through these three entities. the problem that we are dealing with are the accidents in our country. That is the problem. Now, the entity that has to respond to that is the Road Traffic Management Corporation. Now, there are targets. In relation to particularly fatal accidents, the number of people that die per annum. In terms of the Millennium Goal, we are expected to have that the number of people that are dying by 2040. We are sitting at 14,000 per annum. By 2014, we are expected to be 7,000 per annum. Those goals are not just goals in terms of numbers, reducing the number of people who are dying from 14,000 to 7,000. Not just numbers. It's the problem, the consequences and the negative results of people that die through road accidents. The burden, social burden as a result of that, and the economic burden as a result of that. We're not talking numbers, just numbers. We are talking numbers so that we can be able to measure. We can be able to measure our performance in relation to reducing the social burden as a result of those accidents and the economic burden as a result of that. The social burden is in a situation where the breadwinner dies, a dependent of a breadwinner that immediately becomes the responsibility of the state. Or they become the responsibility of the relative. Because the state can't pay for everything that a child who lost a parent. But also, even if the state was to pay for everything, it is not only the material resources that people dependent get from their parents. It is also the social support in relation to guiding that person on how to grow and behave. It is particular value. It is also the support that each person needs during hard times. I'm going to be 60 this year. when I'm faced with difficult times, I still wish that my father was still alive and my mother was still alive. So when we are dealing then, the mandate given to the RPMC is not a mandate related to issuing tickets. It's a mandate that is related to addressing the social problems that affect communities as a result of accidents. Even if a person has not died, a person who becomes crippled because of an accident becomes a liability in the family. Then certain people in the family have to adjust and accommodate that person. And if we have that understanding at this level, it would then be possible for all of us to work in changing the perception at community level, for people to behave with a full understanding of why we say put a seat belt on, and not put a seat belt because you are afraid of the traffic cop. Put a seat belt because you have a clear understanding of what are the negative impacts socially and economically of not putting a seatbelt if you are then involved in an accident. We also are expecting that these three entities work very closely to solve these problems. But on our side, we are determined to be very tough in terms of the laws, particularly the enforcement part of it. Because we can't massage drunkards. But most of it is, say, cousin, the group. We want to send that strong message to people who drink and drink and drink, and then when they are drunk, they use our roads. The roads belong to the state. To kill our people. We want to be very tough people. And there are instruments that can be used to not only make it the responsibility of the state that a person doesn't drink and go on the road and drive and kill other people. We can make it a responsibility of the people not to do that. And there are instruments that we are looking at. And we would want to work as a collective when we discuss those things. Because if there are 50 million people in this country, we can't have 50 million traffic cops to check on each and every person who is behaving wrongly and violating traffic law. There has to come a stage where we make it the responsibility of those people that get licenses to behave in a responsible manner. So What we are then expecting is that when our plan, our strategic plan of reducing accidents in South Africa becomes effective, then less money will be needed by the road accident fund. That is the expected end result, that when our strategic plan of reducing accidents in South Africa becomes effective, one of the indicators will be that less money will be required by the road accident fund, because there will be fewer road accidents. Also, the number 14,000 people will come down, counted to 200 people per annum. The accident, could be an accident again, then there will be a collision of two cars, and you will be done with it again. Could be an accident that no one would have avoided, like something breaking in the car. I go to the case. In negligence, see this and get accident. When that happens underdeveloped areas, it will be easier for the government to develop underdeveloped areas in this sense. The 40 billion that we are spending on road accidents per annum will shift over to Mkakongabi, Ali Mkakolan Salafa. There is no road to my own church in Harding, where I was born. And if our plan works well, maybe 30 years from now there will be a road to my church. And there are schools that are still not accessible because there are no bridges to cross the river. Ingane zibhukuda nemthwalo, zilande ziyokholektha i-stationery nama-school books that are delivered by i-government, and you can't cross the river. So the children have to come out from the school to collect. That is the seriousness of the issue of transport. We can't just look at ourselves in silence. We should be saying, how best could the 40 billion that is spent on road accidents be utilized to develop this country? In my view, it would be better to utilize that money to build a road, to play electricity in an area called Inuba, where there is a community, a village that is at the bottom, and the hospital that is at the top of the hill, and then there is a tree, big tree in between. So, six people move from that village wanting to access the hospital, there's no road. And when they get tired, they sit under the tree. And many of them have died under that tree. And the tree today is called the tree of death. So my mother's language is good. It is wrong to spend more money, to budget more money for fatal accidents. It would have been better if that money was utilized to build and improve the infrastructure. It is very, very wrong that we can spend 40 billion on road accidents. So that is the point of the task, that we are working towards reducing expenditure in road accident fund. Now, we will take a presentation by the road accident fund, and thereafter we will interact and then bring back the road traffic management, and then try and link the road traffic enforcement agency to the RTMC and the road accident fund. That is the relationship. Get that Kuluma going to be about what happens if the leg, there is no coordination between the leg and the arm. Kuluma Baliwoko. We invite the chairperson of the board of the road accident fund.
Thanks, Madam Chairperson. I know this is only my second meeting, but I've noticed during your introductory remarks today and yesterday, you made several inputs in isiZulu. Okay, I fund isiZulu, but Lungu, okay, and I just hope that there's nothing I'm missing, because I don't know when you speak Zulu whether in fact there's something different that you're saying, or is it just a translation of what you really said in English. So I wouldn't like to lose that, and we are at a bit of a disadvantage. So I'm a long in the committee, I think, of which there are only two, but if you speak in Zulu, we're not going to follow everything that you said. I take it you're just repeating what you really said in English. Otherwise, we can't follow you.
In some instances, I'm not repeating what I'm saying. I am expressing myself in a manner that I am very comfortable in, because English is also not my mother tongue, and if that happens, I would ask you to ask the person sitting next to you to actually ask you to understand, because it happens naturally that when one is speaking about something and you are passionate about, you can't avoid going back to your mother language. It happens naturally. But there is nothing that when I teach to my mother's tongue, it's not because there is information that I would want to hide from you. All these things are recorded. It's when I become passionate and I want to express myself in a manner that satisfies me. Thank you. Sorry, and also there are things that can never be said in English. Like, when I say ngesiZulu, in Zulu, unesisho, there is a saying, SCT, that says, ikuzenle uku, esuthi suthi suthe, ikhwele phezu kwethu, ikuzenle uku. You can't say that in English because you don't have cultural events where you slaughter a cow and you drink Zulu beer, and then after that people would get drunk and attack others. You can't translate that into English. But it means that a person would enjoy himself and then go and do the wrong things that would affect others negatively.
Oh, yeah,
well,
you are
trying.
Each one. Yeah. Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, representatives of the Department of Transport, board and executive members of the Rhode Island Farm, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. The presentation will be led by the acting chief executive, Mr. Nathan Delasso, and we will participate in the discussion. Mine is to really introduce the team. The board is represented by myself, the deputy chair next to me, Mr. Masangu, and next to him, Mr. Kunta. The executive team is led by Mr. Delasso. To his left is the chief operations officer, Mr. Anderson Mann. To his right is his chief financial officer, Ms. Jaska and Ms. Tukasani. I will hand over to Mr. Delasso to start. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Dr. Kapinga. Today, Chair will refer to the Chair of the Portfolio Committee. Thanks to the committee and the chair of the board of IFF already observed protocol. And I will take it that it's all observed. And welcome our colleagues from transport who are here with us today, both from RCMC and RTIA, and my colleagues at the Rhode Island Fund. I think one thing generally unique about the Rhode Island Fund is that when people hear that they are in the neighborhood, they want to come and hear. And I understand it's because of the complexity of this organization and this business. And to assist myself, in fact, when I deal with the fund, is understanding that it's mostly comprised of a multitude of complex moving components that form this ecosystem. There are different parts to it, and each part influences the other. To make an example of that, and then to assist as we go forward in the presentation on understanding how these components hang together, is the fact that the Road Accident Fund itself is based on an Act of Parliament, the Road Accident Fund Act of 1996. But what it does, it brings in all the other legislation. For instance, in issues of prescription, it's not our Act that prescribes, but it's the other Prescription Act that hangs with the Road Accident Fund Act. I make that point because the big challenges that the fund has faced are based on the delictual nature of the RAF Act. The Chair has introduced the team. I should just say that in the pack that you have, our legal and compliance executive, unfortunately, is not well, so she didn't join us. And at the time of printing, we hadn't confirmed all the members that you see here in front of you. So on the screen there, you are seeing everyone who is in this room, and not in the sitting order, though. I will take you through the agenda. The presentation that I am using is basically the same that you have, except for a few spelling mistakes that are there. And then, I think on some slide 43 or 4, there is one additional slide that we have. And the reason we have brought it along is it represents the results as at the end of March this year. And they are not audited, and the actuaries have not also worked with them. But we brought it along based on the numbers as we read them from our own reporting system. So they do not have the force and effect of a document that has been audited. but we just brought it along so that it shows the exact numbers, because the numbers we were working with were forecast for 2012. The agenda basically starts with the overview of the Road Accident Fund, and it is important to set the base of what creates this organization that we are talking about, and the journey that it has gone through, the evolution from the time in 1942 up to today, and the different attempts at improving the legislation that has been guiding this entity, which is focused mostly on the post-crash care in terms of road accidents. And we still have certain challenges that we also socialize with you in here. And then we get to the strategic objectives and related outcomes. And I will discuss the key initiatives that are taking place currently in the organization to get us to a better financial health and future, and also to improve our operations before we get to the last throw of the dice in terms of the RAPS, the Road Accident Benefit Scheme, and which I'm sure the members are aware of in terms of the policy that was approved by Parliament on the 7th of September. And then we'll talk to the high level on the budget, and then the where to from here, basically, and we'll take your questions. There are other additional slides that are on your page. That is basically for support in terms of the financials. Our mandate is, as I said earlier, is derived from the legislation, and our mandate is to compensate users of South African roads for loss or damage wrongfully caused by negligent driving of a motor vehicle within the borders of this country. In your pack, border is spelled as border, so you will just cancel the A. It was a finger problem. But I think what is more important about this mandate is that the delivery on this mandate actually fulfills the right that emanates from the Constitution of the Republic. That is the right to equality, dignity, health care, and social security. And the vision, therefore, that we have and share as an organization, which is the common vision that we drive into, it's based basically on the mandate that we have to deliver. And that vision is to provide higher standard of care to road accident victims to restore balance in the social system. Those of you who are observant will notice that this vision has changed a little bit from the one that we had last year and the last 6 years. And the reason for that is because we're moving closer to an end state, I hope, where RAF is part of the social security net, as envisaged by the government in terms of the comprehensive social security system, which will also be aligned with NHI. The mission is basically to provide appropriate cover to all road users within our borders, focusing on rehabilitation and compensation for injuries and death. And also, because of our nature, we also indemnify the wrongdoer and actually take over his liability as the fund. And that was the objective of the design of this fund. And as we go into the presentation, you will see that we get to a stage where we actually, the common law right of a victim to sue a wrongdoer was taken away, but we'll discuss that later on. This is our core values, based specifically because of the nature of our business on Ubuntu, and we like to emphasize that whilst we care for each other, it is important for us also to care for and support our customers. Unfortunately for our customers, they actually don't choose us. It's because of a mishap of an accident that they happen to be our customers. And that there lies in the challenge also, in that we are one of the few organizations in the world that covers the whole country. So if we were to subsegment our market, we'll have 50 million people that we'll have to engage and talk to. The second key core value is that of being solution focused. And I think even our representations, our presentation today shows the attempts that have been ongoing in order to find solutions to the challenges, some of them which are actually systemic and created by the very act that established our mandate. So we offer the solutions and take responsibility for the actions that we take when we solve those problems. And I'm sure the members of the committee would have many examples of instances where they have interacted with the fund and the challenges have emanated, and I'm hopeful that in most instances we would have come up and be of service and assistance. As the year ended on the 31st of March, I think we have paid up to 12 billion already to South Africans who have been involved in accidents. It shows that the challenges, the number of accidents, the number of claims is increasing at an unbelievable rate. The pride in what we do is actually talking to us as an organization. In my past, I've worked for organizations whose motive have always been the bottom line. It's incredible, it's incredibly fulfilling to actually be in an organization where its sole mandate is actually to do good. So when others are doing CSI as a small component of their business, our business sits in the front, in fact, to address both the social and economic burden that is created by accidents in this country. And I think that is the reason why for us it is important to develop a culture that is customer-centric, that we bring in people that are aligned with these values and vision. The journey so far, basically the problems of the fund have been with it since inception. From the 40s to the 50s in the beginning, the Motor Vehicle Assurance Act was promulgated in 1942 and took effect on the 1st of May in 1946. That's about 66 years, and I'm sure the chair was less than, wasn't born yet. She was born about... You see, that was late. You were born covered already.
1972.
At the time when the fund started, in fact, it was generally almost privatized. There was a flourishing number of many MVA assurance companies. And between that period and 1969, more than six amendments were done to the Act, trying to organize it so that it actually fulfills the mandate it was established for. And the companies that were involved in this business, most of them got liquidated because of the issues of increase in terms of accidents, whilst it was almost impossible to increase the premiums. And the premiums at the time were collected through the third-party insurance. Some of you will remember that. And then in 1956, the MVA insurers were amalgamated to form one fund. And the consolidation was based on the Act promulgated of 1972. But the troubled times actually began to rear their head in 1984 when the MVA showed for the first time a deficit of 217 million. And from that day up to today, that deficit has been growing. At the time, government realized that if they were to arrest the deficit, they had to increase premiums by 200 to 300%. Therefore, they moved and moved into the fuel levy in 1986. The advantages thereof were that everyone was contributing. The advantage with the fuel levy, it made collection of revenue easier and simpler. But the challenge is that it's not even today aligned with the amount of liability emanating from accidents that the fund entails. So in 1989, there was an integration of all the other funds of the TPV state with the South African funds. 1990 to 1996, public dissatisfaction was increasing, and then the government actually appointed the Melamed Commission. You will realize that between then and now, in 2002, there have been 7 commissions of inquiry into the fund, looking at different components of the fund, if you take that view of an ecosystem that I spoke about. And the Melamed Commission revealed in its finding irregularities and fraud that was endemic in the fund, still is, in fact, today. Widespread inefficiencies in terms of how the fund was running its affairs, and certain levels of negligence. And with the promulgation of the Road Accident Fund Act 56 of 1996, the common law was suspended. The common law was suspended against the wrongdoer, and the fine totally replaced the wrongdoer in an instance where a person wanted to sue. What is incredible for me, though, is that if you look at the period 96 to 2000, is that accidents were growing at about 3% at the time. What is not on the slide here, which I think could be also a factor in terms of the increase on the deficit to 7 billion, is that this was the new South Africa, and suddenly the net had expanded, and more people were becoming aware of the availability of this insurance system. In 98, a white paper was published, and a proposal looking at structured benefits and also the ceiling, the cap on liability was beginning to be discussed. In 1999, then the government appointed an RAF commission, which is called the Factual Commission, which in 2003, they in principle accepted the recommendations from the commission. And in 2004, our liability reached 19 billion. In 2005, the RAF began to implement some of the legislation that was aimed at capping the liability of the fund in terms of the benefits. And that act is the one that is called the Amendment Act that was took effect in 2008. In our turnaround strategy in 2006, we focused on 6 key objectives. The first one was looking at operational effectiveness and efficiency. And you remember that I spoke about the Melamed Commission, which said that there were certain irregularities, widespread inefficiencies in the system. So the other objective was to minimize the cost of administration and promote good governance, foster positive stakeholder relations, develop a sustainable economic model, and restore the fund back to health. Did this succeed? We call the slide the last throw of the dice, and you'll see the reason why. The solution implementation, basically 2006, we did a diagnosis to design a new business and operating model, which resulted in the new IT infrastructure in 2007, which was to form the backbone of the new operating model. And we implemented SAP and developed the revenue requirement model, which, although it was accepted as a useful tool by Treasury, it's only in 2 years that they showed that they actually did look at it. At one stage where we got 17 cent increase on the fuel levy, but it has proved difficult for the fuel levy to be predictable by the fund in terms of the allocation every year. So whilst they concede that the revenue model was a good scientific tool for the levy, they haven't implemented it in full. In 2008, we procured a new claims management system, FINEOS, and put in place the legislative amendments that were promulgated in 2005, and in fact started in August, in the 1st of August. And you will see that when I talk to the type of claims that are in the backlog of the Road Accident Fund, this is quite important to understand because it brought in a few changes and it was challenged as well. And some of the challenges in the Concord were finalized on the 25th November 2010. Yeah. So, 2009, we began to design the new operating model in detail and began to implement certain parts of it in 2010-2011. Basically, the hallmarks of the new operating model is a distributed network that allows people access into the fund. And some of it you will see as I continue with the presentation. Now to the future. I think the issue of the improvement of efficiency is still a key issue within the organization. And you will see when I show you some of the work we have done in terms of reducing the backlog, which is a challenge for us, and also developing a service-oriented organizational culture. You will know that as part of the ecosystem, it is important to impact your employees the same way that you want to transform the organization. That is the most difficult part, in fact, that you have to address in any turnaround strategy, the people part. Continue also to reduce fraud, and there have been high-profile cases that have been reported recently of some of the successes that we have. But it is correct to say that 2014 and beyond, the Road Accident Fund is in the vortex of change, in that we hope that the no-fault benefit scheme will be a reality in the not-too-distant future. And for us, we are hopeful that it is a change of the, in terms of the entity and also the mandate. And the way we address the current liabilities of the fund, that we will be able to recompense these and deal with them. And in fact, there is one there that is referred to called the Mbumbu case. Mbumbu case is one of the instances that come from our Amendment Act, where the Concord said that the Act, that section 18, is actually unconstitutional, and they asked the minister to go and correct them. What it does, it gives the people who are passengers in vehicles who were only entitled to 25,000 rand claim an opportunity to elect whether they want the new amended act to apply or the old, the 25,000 rand. So it removes the inequity that was there in the old act in terms of the passengers. And the challenge with it, though, is that we are still working in terms of assisting the Department of Transport to have the new section amended, section 18 amended, and this should happen before August this year, because that is the time that we are given by the Constitutional Court. And there are certain implications if it doesn't happen, in that it could cost the fund almost 4 billion rand if that does not take place. So, but we are confident that it will happen. It's not a complex legislation. And I think the discussion around RAPSA and its hallmark will happen with the discussion in this room, and Dr. Dutoy is here as well. It is important for the Road Accident Fund to understand the transitional arrangement because of its impact in terms of the assets, liabilities, employees, and everyone else in the Road Accident Fund. And the future, basically, as I said earlier, it belongs with alignment with the Comprehensive Social Security System and the NHI. I need to take a breath, my breath. Members of the committee, as I said, in spite of some of the changes that have taken place and the improvements, in the current intellectual system. Certain systemic challenges still exist. One of them is subjectivity. That isn't the subjectivity that happens in determining career paths and related earnings of claimants. We have to use an army of experts, which actually creates, one, it delays, it puts a delay in the system, and secondly, it brings in a lot of subjectivity. That those that have money are actually better able to bring in an army of hired guns, and those that don't. So the fund will have to always meet them with equal power in order to be able to get fair and justifiable settlement. The other issue of complexity is still a problem, and that is the complexity in the determination of income. It requires experts such as actuaries, medical skills, and you end up, in fact, there is an industry that has developed around the fund, that feeds on the fund. It is not an exaggeration what the Deputy Minister said yesterday in MINMET, that in fact, more than 40% of our funds, they don't go to accident victims. But they go to service providers, they go to many other intermediaries that are in the system. And so every time when we increase the level, we increase this, it doesn't get the full effect of being felt by the people it was designed for. The people it was designed to put them in a position they would have been if the accident didn't happen. So these are the challenges. And these challenges, they emanate because of this is a delictual system. So it's based on fault, and the parties should prove the lack or the existence of fault when an accident happens. And you know the challenge when people are riding in a taxi and they are involved in an accident. And then some instances they wake up and the taxi is already rolling. And that person, when he comes in, he must prove that in fact there was negligence somewhere before the accident. Those are hurdles that they have to jump over. Inequities. You know, with this one, it's actually a very embarrassing issue. That the black child whose mother and father is a truck driver and a domestic, for instance, her future will be estimated that he wouldn't have advanced beyond what his parents were. And that is the subjectivity that is required by our own, by the practice that happens. So if you have parents of good standing, you are in a better position than a child who doesn't. But you know, most of you who are here, that in fact we don't come from that type of parentage ourselves. We are the ones who have had to break through from where they were to be where we are. So the subjectivity of estimating what you would have amounted to is a problem for the fund. And that is the reason why we strongly push that we move into an offer system as a matter of agency. The other wastage comes in terms of the issue of the contingency that the attorneys use. There is an act, there is a statutory requirement that the contingency shouldn't be more than 25%. But the lawyers are not expected to even disclose to RAF how much contingency. Contingency is the success money, basically, that they enter into an agreement with the claimant to say, if we succeed, we will take so much. And they are the ones who actually determine how much it took for them to finalize the case. There have been instances where the contingency has been up to 50%. And this has got nothing to do with instances where the claim is successful, but the claimant does not receive the money because the attorney suddenly decides not to hand over the money. There have been many of those that we as the RAF have had to deal with and recommend to claimants to go to the law society. And also the perverse incentive of prolonging the case so that you increase legal costs. You know, in all instances, we are responsible for the legal costs, and the system, the current system, incentivizes the service providers to protract the case so that then they build up in terms of the legal costs. These are the transaction costs, basically. And the other delays in terms of obtaining information that will assist the fund to finalize the case. I think what we overlooked in the act that we have is the issue of substantive compliance. The RAF Form 1 does not give us enough information to be able to settle the claim immediately. And also, the representing attorneys, they can add information and even amend the claim at any stage before it gets to court. And we end up settling in the steps of the court because they would bring in new information all the time. And I will show you some of the initiatives that we are trying to put in place. We have even engaged with the Department of Justice and in terms of the court rules, at least to stop them from amending the claim 30 days before the court sitting, so that we are able to interrogate them. And some of the problems, which are not based on the delict, but they do compound our environment in terms of macro and micro issues. The income and the expenditure is not linked. And the reason is because the number of accidents that take place this year, we don't get the same amount in terms of the labor to cover those accidents. So we are not a fully funded scheme. And I think the other challenge, and it talks specifically to our colleagues from RCMP, the lack of the accident database in this country is a huge problem. Besides that, we are unable to know in a particular year the number of accidents that have occurred before they even claim from us so that we can estimate our future liability. Also, it would assist us if we were to assist RCMC to develop an effective database, accident database, so that it would also limit the incidence of fraud, which is quite endemic in the system at this stage. Our legislation is an inhibitor. And the environmental issues with the high accident rate, I take this document as read. In terms of the internal challenges, is that we are an organization in transformation. And sometimes I myself feel in the environment that there is change fatigue in the organization. But there are things that still need to change. We're working on improving. Most of our employees, they come from the legal fraternity. So, because of the highly litigious nature of our environment, their expectation is always that they are confrontational. And now we're training them to actually think of the customer as a customer, and even the lawyers as customers, so that we reduce the temperature and they begin to serve them as customers, because that's what they are in our environment. So that will take some time. And let's talk specifically to the reputation of the organization, that when we fail to deliver on some of the elements that support the mandate for the fund, that affects the reputation and the outlook of the fund. And yet we know that no one in this country will say that we don't need this type of insurance. Strategic objectives. The other strategy is generally aligned with most of our
How much time? How much time will it take to do?
It's up to you. I can run faster than I'm doing. We can upset the basis, I think.
Yes. I allowed you to go into detail when you were giving the background, because it is very, very important. Now, when we come to the strategy, if we can move faster, because we're supposed to be out of the commission by August.
Okay.
And we are going to take the action.
This slide basically talks to our alignment with the government priorities. And I'll take it as word. As you can see where the trees are. In fact, that's the area where we are. And maybe the penultimate tick I should explain for you, because you might find it difficult to understand how pursuing African advancement and enhanced international cooperation is happening with the fund as well. We actually in huge collaboration with our sister companies in both Namibia, Swaziland, and Botswana. These are the countries that also have an MVA system like ours. And we're talking to them quite a lot. In fact, Botswana, they took the recommendation of SACWEL as they were and implemented them. And today they've turned around, they've got more than 216 million pula as a surplus in their fund. So we've seen it work in Botswana. Namibia also have transformed. They are semi, they are a hybrid of fault and no fault system. And we have seen the other parts of it that are working. Because the no fault system actually, it reduces the administrative burden. And it gives you defined benefits and structured payments. And those are critical success factors of an easier administrative system, rather than this highly litigious one that we're working with. We are also aligned with the National Department of Transport's priorities. As you can see, the outcome one, an efficient and integrated infrastructure network that serves as a catalyst for social and economic development. And I think you understand how the RAF fits into that. And all the four that have all the four that we have checked in there. Now, our strategic objectives, 2013 to 2017, there are four key ones. And I'll start with the legislative environment. It's a legislative dispensation that is aligned to the principles of social security. That is where we're going. That is our end state, basically. So it's amending the current legislation and bringing about a no-fault system with the Department of Transport, which is a comprehensive, which is aligned to a comprehensive social security system. Once we build with that, our other focus is at a solvent, liquid, and sustainable road accident fund by 2020. Looking at additional funding, managing and reducing legal costs. That is the first one, in fact, I think, which if we can arrest. Last year, I think we legal costs for the fund were about 3.4 billion. And if we can begin to arrest the escalation of those costs, it would contribute quite a lot. And some of the initiatives around this is encouraging direct claims into the company. Manage and reduce operational costs and also improve our ability to settle claims quickly. And I will talk to the challenges when I talk to the backlog strategy that we have there. The third one is a customer-centric, operationally effective and efficient road accident fund. 2017 should be the time when, in fact, we become the most boring company in this country because no one is interested because everything is working as it should. And improving customer service requires that everything else is in place that supports that approach of customer centricity. The objective is to become more predictable, in that if you are involved in an accident, you can almost estimate when it, how long it will take for you to get paid. Currently, that sounds like a pipe dream. So certain things will have to change. And the fourth one is the internally focused, which deals basically with transforming and capacitating the fund. As I said, that the type of employees we had before might not be the same people that will take us with us to the future. Some of them, we need to reskill and retrain and refocus the business. It's a culture engineering, basically, so that we change the way we do things in the organization. These are the current initiatives. The first one, as I spoke to the new operating model, and aimed at improving accident information collection and management. The detail to this is quite vast, because it also means that we work with ambulance organizations, hospitals, and all of those, so that when people are wheeled in immediately, they are in our database. Information is quite critical for us. And the sooner you get information on an accident, the better, because with time, people forget facts around the accident. Mm-hmm. And also, in terms of fraud, there are many instances of pegging in terms of claims, where suddenly a taxi that's carrying 16 people and then you end up with 60 claims, and you don't know which one is right and which one is not, because no one took a list of names in the taxi. So it helps to get information quite quickly. Proactively originating benefit applications, and I will show you some of the initiatives where we get involved in mass accidents and originate claims immediately. And that assists us to improve on our business. And improving service delivery efficiency and effectiveness. And also accountability and performance management. And I take it as read. The backlog issue is an interesting issue. In 2006, we had a backlog of almost 500,000. And we eroded that backlog. Today, we have a backlog of about 250,000. The problem with it is that as you work at it, the most difficult cases are the ones that take longer. More than 95% of our claims are still processed through attorneys, through courts. So it means that the battery of experts that are required will be involved. The country does not have enough actuaries, does not have enough medicals, therapists, and all those experts to actually speed up the process. When you spoke to the Department of Justice with the DG for Justice, she said on average, our cases actually clog the court roll. It's 40% RAF if you attend all the courts in the country. And you must bear in mind that some of the courts are special courts in this country, therefore they don't deal with our claims. So the problem could be higher in other areas, that you are almost on 80% of the court roll. So that means that whatever you do, you cannot push that claim quicker than the court process is. And the issue about amending claims right up to the date of the case is also that big challenge, which makes it difficult even with the claims that are already in the system to estimate how much they are in terms, their contribution in terms of our deficit. So the backlog strategy basically is a plan that we've devised that has sub-segmented the claims. They are different because they are pre-amendment claims, pre-amendment act claims. And the post-amendment act claims have got their own different nuances that also affect them. The issues around the general damages, and with the amendment act, the general damages you can only claim if you have got 30% body impairment. And we have issues of having to wait for the maximum medical improvement in order to be able to ascertain the claim. So that takes about 12 to 18 months, which adds on to the complexity of dealing with this. That's why we actually think that the no-fault system would be the panacea that will actually assist the fund in a big way in terms of administering the benefits so that they are easily accessible. And also the issue of the transitional arrangement, the Mvumvu case that I spoke about. Everyone is waiting for the August. If you understand that passengers, they are more than 40 or 50% of the accident victims, so it means that is the impact that is there as well, because they are waiting to see the amendment to Section 18 so that they claim based on which of the system works better for them. So it creates the backlog as well. So we are currently working with the auditing of what is in our system and the type of information that is required. In terms of our new operating model, we created the capacity to go out and source information ourselves. because most of our claimants also do not know where to get and how to source information. Sometimes even when they go to police stations, they are not favored with the police report if they were involved in an accident and so on, to be able to submit a claim with substantive compliance. So those are the challenges that create a serious delay in the system. But the other is the dependency in terms of the court. And also, we know that the claims that look easier to tackle, that's where usually fraud is infested. So when we handle them, we need also to test them with our forensic department to make sure that there is no fraud in them. The other initiative is the legislative changes, the amendment to the current RAF Act. This is different from the legislation that needs to take place for RAPSA. The current Act itself needs some intervention. My colleagues are saying that I must raise the pace. But on this, these changes are actually required to assist us with the current Act in the current environment. And the Department of Transport is quite aware of this, and they are working on it. We have made proposals and submitted to them. We have even spoken to Justice on looking at reducing the interest rate, the mora interest, from 15.5%. It's been like this since 1993. So it has ignored what is happening in the economic environment in the country. And the other initiative, of course, is the one that I've been talking to in terms of the customer and community engagement.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry, this is the last. If there is one slide that I would like us to spend time on, please let it be this one. It's about legislative changes, and there is no better forum to listen to why we're asking for this. So please, number 20.
This one.
Number 20.
Okay. Chair, the amendments to the current Act, well, the Mvumvu one is quite obvious because it's from the Concord and it is an instruction basically that it should happen. The second one is the proposal on an emergency tariff and the increase of the emergency tariff. We actually have two tariffs currently. And in fact, in the meetings that we had with DOT, we were looking at developing what would be a RAPSA tariff and utilize that tariff for the current fund. The tariff basically hasn't increased since 2008. And there are instances now on the tariff where the emergency is actually less than the non-emergency tariff. So we need to promulgate a new tariff, and that has also been submitted to the Department of Transport. There is a requirement in terms of the Amendment Act of 2008 that the minister should publish a non-serious injury list. Some of you who know about this, they call it in the South Africa, which speaks Afrikaans. It used to be a meat list, basically. That list assists in terms of the benefits on the non-serious injury. As you know that I said, you need 30% body impairment to qualify on the general damages. So if you lack that, then you cannot claim from the fund because we removed general damages in total in the 2008 Act. And then also the proposed the tariff for assessment of serious injuries. And this one, the proposed regulation to allow, maybe if we can just discuss, I've got Andre here who actually has a full impact of these things on a daily basis. Which are the ones that we have already submitted?
So the ones talking to the tariffs we have submitted, I think the critical in terms of day-to-day processing, what is needed is the the proposal to amend the specific documents that is required before the legal cost can stop running. So currently what happens is, after 120 days, they give the minimum information, the attorneys, and then on the 121st day, they summon us, and from there, they start running up legal costs, which is this $4 billion. So what we want to do is to specify a list of things that the attorneys must give us. So when they give us these documents, then we can settle within 120 days. But before that, they cannot summon us. That is the one on the amendment to specify all documents required to settle the claim efficiently. The very important one is the implementation of direct payments. Currently, we lost, 2 years ago, we lost a High Court case in Cape Town High Court where we wanted to implement a system where we could pay the compensation directly to the claimants. The High Court stopped us, so what we want with that one is the right to pay the compensation directly to the accident victim and the legal cost to the attorney. Because currently what's happening, we pay everything to them, then they hold back the money, sometimes months, and they hold back big percentages in terms of the contingency fee. And then the other one is then the amendments to structure the payment. It's to pay it in installments so that there's not this incentive to pay the lump sum and the attorney's taking of 3 or 4 million rand, they're taking 25% or 30% or 40%. So the intention is to pay it on a monthly basis as the salary would have been earned.
Thanks, Andrew. Chair, I think maybe when we get to the discussion at the end, then we can pick on this specifically because they talk to the core of the future going forward. I was on customer and community engagement, and basically I think here you have seen some of the instances. Those of you have been lucky to see road accident found on the road. And my colleagues here will tell you some of the events that are still planned for the future. I think the important thing here is basically to build the awareness in terms of what we are doing, and also to demystify the fund, because some people do think that you cannot talk to us without going through lawyers. And we want to show them that we speak your language, we understand your needs, we have had quite successful outings in terms of, even in rural areas for your benefit, we've been to Msinga and Potchefstroom and so. Yes. And also we are involved in key road safety initiatives. We feel that accidents are the only cost driver of our business, and we cannot just stand and watch. We have to be involved in terms of supporting FTMC and other agencies and organizations in terms of road safety. And we are involved in the Decade of Action program, scholar patrols, because we believe that if we intervene early, we could change driver and pedestrian behavior in the country. And I think the success in terms of road accidents and the way we behave on the road will happen when there's a social sanction for that. We create peer pressure so that it's uncool to behave in a way that is not assisting or sharing courteously in terms of the roads and transport. This is a slight detail in terms of the new operating model. It talks to the touch points, the elements, basically the levels, the elements of the new operating model. As you can see, it shows you the front part, which is the customer service network. It's a national footprint that we're looking at, and you'll see, I think it is in my next slide, where we are already. And then the processing units in the organization, the back office, and the support functions to this. And expanding the service network basically to cover the whole country and the underserviced areas. This is the status quo, and it's still increasing. We are improving and also improving the processes that we follow in hospitals. It's just that recently there was a change by the Department of Health in terms of how they classify hospitals. So we were in a lot of hospitals that were suddenly changed and no longer dealing with trauma. And we need to reorganize ourselves so that we again are in appropriate places where we are easily accessible. But we are talking to health and the MECs, because most of the power in terms of hospitality resides in the provinces. Developing a distributed network of CSN contact points, provincial offices. Soon, you will be able to access RAF in all the provinces. There are provinces that are under service where we don't have a provincial office. We will be establishing that as well. And the community service centers and the hospital service centers, where we cannot put structure and people, we will put people mobile so that people will be getting in and out. And that is the way also we collect information that we need to finalize claims quickly. As you can see, that container there is in Welezane in KZN. We constructed it because the hospital didn't have enough space to accommodate us. Increased focus on patient rehabilitation. The key elements of the new of RAFSA is the focus on rehabilitation, so that people go back to work. The current RAF system encourages people to remain disabled, because then that's when they are paid. So it is important that we move into a no-fault system where the biggest spend will be on medical rehabilitation of the accident victim, rather than a windfall of getting huge amounts of money that is not usually used for what it is meant for. Many people who actually got millions because of accidents today are destitute and become a burden again for government and their families. This is the slide that I wanted to get to, that I said earlier that we proactively initiate funeral and other benefits arising from mass accidents. The picture that you see there at the corner, that was the accident in Harrismith where 32 people died. We were there within an hour, and we actually sent people from Joburg and from Durban as well. They met there and were involved with the Department of Transport. And Sabisa actually was with us there when he was still working for KwaZulu-Natal. And in the last festive season, 2011, we originated 219 new claims, just on accidents, on mass accidents where we have been. And the other picture that you see was in Polokwane, it was a mass accident as well. And then we had to assist with basically the interment of the bodies. And in Easter, this Easter that you've just come from, we originated 49. So it means that there is something that is working. If we have a no-fault system and this is consolidated, you could actually do more. Because in this instance, you have to actually to circumvent the law that requires that we have to get a session from the family in order to be able to pay the undertakers. It's a tedious process. The backlog reduction, I've spoken a lot about the backlog and the issues around it. But I think what is important is that we're opening each file and going through each and every file, each and every piece of paper in the file. You must understand that in instances where there is fraud, there is always collusion. And collusion usually will come from your own people in the organization. So it's important for us to create an environment that discourages people from owning files so that a file can be touched by anyone in the system. And that's why we want to record what is there and also what is physically available between the system and the hard files. So this process is the one that is bending our floor currently. And basically this is the audit process that we have been doing. We are using our audit office as well to assist us. In the process, we want to make sure that we don't lose some of the files in the system. And that is the process. We have spoken about the legislative changes. I think we will come back when we... These are just the pictures, some of the pictures, when we were building awareness and taking the service to the people. and growing a new generation of responsible road users with our CSI. You see our intervention in schools. And we are involved in quite a lot of the initiatives with the RTMC. And investing in communities that we serve. As you can see here, this is a preschool. We co-funded it with the N3 Toll Compassion. It's one of the activities that we are involved in. Some of our CSI activities is painting a zebra crossing near schools and building a traffic calming devices on the road to reduce the number of accidents. In fact, if there are some of you here who are from Soweto, we were involved. There is a street where two kids have died because of the speed of cars on that road. We're working with the member of the mayoral committee, and I saw her yesterday at the midnight, to work with the community so that we build those devices on the road. We also assisting hospitals with trauma units so that they can serve our customers quickly. And all this change as well, there should be something that shows the change in attitude in terms of the organization. As you see there, we moved into a new, fresh organization. You all agree that the old logo looks like a police logo of the past, the colors. So it was important that to change this, we change the psyche of the business as well. But our success would be when the change that is taking place is being felt by the accident victims we have to deal with us. And the issue of predictability is a big issue. And basically we are beginning to see, we have had issues with funding in the past. And I think there is a change in terms of the pace of the claims that are being settled and the levy that we are getting, which will help us in terms of building up for the RAPSA, so that we will be able to ring fence revenue to deal with the backlog to allow the new dispensation to take place. Some of the savings are coming from the 2008 Act, Amendment Act, but also the complexity that it has added in the system is that it makes processing claims quite slower than it was the case before. I'm sure there are instances of cherry-picking as well in terms of our people on claims that are easier to settle and then those that are not easy to settle delay a little bit. But the net deficit is expected to decline. Unfortunately, in fact, I must just apologize here that the actuaries have not given us the latest figures. So some of the numbers we used here are based on the 2011 trend, and they are working on the final figures based on the end of the fiscal 2012. But there is a slide which is different from the one that you have. This one basically shows you the reducing numbers of outstanding claims. But 2012 was based on the forecast. The actual is this one that I'm showing you. And this hasn't been audited yet, but it's the numbers that we have based on the business that we running. And on 2012, you can see that the claims outstanding has increased and is sitting on more than 250,000. And then the actuarial projected numbers, then we separated them because the exercise has not been done by the actuary yet, so that we see the effect of the last year's trend in terms of the reduction of outstanding claims. The claim settled is based on the actual figure, and then the claims lodged as well. So this slide is not in your pack because it actually came yesterday from our brainiacs who do the analysis. Where to from here? This is the end state, the desired end state. The proper service delivery, basically. Greater accessibility to the customer, quick turnaround time, and also predictability of the entire system. And I think internally, in terms of the organization, is sustainability. And I'm thinking that those balls are the key things of the desired end state of the road accident fund. And I think the most important one is the one at the bottom, which is the patient rehabilitation. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. This is a good presentation. Good question. When listening to the presentation, one gets that I'm speaking for myself. I always own my feelings. I don't involve others on how I feel about things. This presentation is different from other presentations that have been looked at. What I noticed was that even the board members were actually communicating many more different things. Meaning that they know what you are presenting to us, and I want to thank you for that. And the chair actually made a comment to say, this is the slide that you said, the most important slide. And I'm sure that other entities, PDG, would gain a lot in just sitting and listening to presentations that are made in the presence of the board members. And also just observe how the management and the board members interact during the presentation, and how easy it makes us to, how easily that make us understand what is expected of us to do. Because we don't run a front and record. It is very, very, very important because it short circuits the time, but also it demonstrates that there is equal responsibility. What was also very, very important in this presentation is that we did not just focus CPO on this financial year and the future. You took us way back from when the road accident fund started and how it has evolved over a number of years and what interventions we made, so that when we look at the future, we are actually informed by the fact, because we were also not there at that time. So it is very, very important. It is very useful. Thank you very much. But what I've also noticed is that it is for the first time that there is a focus on community. Because what happens, as much as the government is dealing with community, responding to the needs of the community, we sometimes forget the role that communities themselves have to play in their own development. And just on that community involvement, there's just one comment that I would want to make. There are constituency offices. Throughout the country, and communities actually come to constituency offices looking for information that relates to the work of government and the entities of government. And in most cases, members of parliament would not have that information. The information about the road accident fund is the most known by the Portfolio Committee on Transport, whereas accidents happen throughout the country and members are then confronted with questions and inquiries from communities. Like in my case, last night I received a call from a person who was referred to me by the speaker of cases and an accident that happened in Guangzhou. I have information here. This then means that if there was information in the constituency office of the speaker of the KZN legislature, she was not going to refer that person to me. And also, if there was information in the constituency office of a member in the area where the accident happened, that person would not have phoned the speaker to waste a lot of time. So maybe in future, if we could have packages for members to go to constituency offices of members, that would also assist. It would assist members to get information, but it would also assist communities to have access to information through constituency offices. Thank you. I will then open for questions and comments. Honorable Ngele, Honorable Sabote.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, President. Thank you very much for the presentation. I really appreciate the fact that you have visited the rural areas in Guatemala. I am for rural areas. I said for rural areas because that is where I stay. Where I was born, everything is on an area. There's something that I might have missed. It. It's a pedestrian, an accident happening to a pedestrian in a rural area. Say maybe it is at night. Not necessarily that Dada was drunk. He was traveling maybe from a neighbor and an accident. Usually it takes time because it happens maybe at night. Nobody sees it, and here he is lying there. We depend on cars that are passing to see that there is a person lying here, taking him to. And the hospitals are limited. I understand when you say the hospital. Those ones that I'm talking of, it's a general hospital, you see. What happens to such accidents? Nobody will know about it. You will not know about it. If you will be fortunate if it's an accident that happens and police are called, then there will be a police maybe. But nothing is happening in rural areas. I don't mean you haven't done anything. I said it, but saying I appreciate it. But in such cases, what can be done? The gravel road does not see even the motorist. The driver might be drunk. Who knows? But there are cases like that. What happens to a case where a parent, let's say it's a single parent, is involved? I mean, you also know that these things take years. Some, they don't even go to court. Some, they are not even reported. And it might happen to a breadwinner. Is there anything maybe it's not in your department? Utada, he was the only parent in the house. And he got this accident. He is in hospital lying there. And the children are at home. Nothing is happening. What do you think can be done to such a family? They might not report, even the children might not report to social workers. I'm talking in cases of rural areas where we don't know anything. Thank you, Tessa.
Thank you. Honorable Gamu.
Thanks, Chairperson. First of all, I'd like to thank both the board Chairperson, who happened to be Bembu, I don't know if you are related, and also Mr. Mvela, the acting CEO, for a beautiful presentation. I want to thank this Road Accident Fund for having offices, especially in the rural areas like ours. Their office is 6 kilometers away from my constituent office, and the people in that area are serviced well. So I just want to thank you for that. And also, I knew about your offices in some of the hospitals in Mpumalanga, like Rob Pereira in Nelspruit. So we really appreciate that. Chairperson, what they are doing is very good. But the change I would like to see is to change the way our people have to, the route they have to take to make their claims, like the legal route, which is costing government a fortune. Why can't you have regional offices where people can go there and make their claims themselves? Why am I saying that, Chairperson? It's because the people on the ground are being robbed by these legal representatives. Like they were saying, most of the money doesn't go to the victims. It goes into the pockets of the lawyers. I'm sorry to say that, but it's the reality. So if we can have a situation where people are able to go to their road accident fund offices and make their claims, I think that might assist and also assist government from in minimizing fraud and corruption. My other question, Chairperson, is that no, I think that's the only question I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I also want to add my voice in the appreciation of the presentation that has been given. My Chairperson, I will start with by saying I think public education should be continuous, not necessarily to the national media, but also to the local radio stations and everywhere else. It should be continuous. I know that you are upping up that, but I think it has not yet reached where it's supposed to reach, especially especially in the indigenous languages. I think we fall short in that. That is why also there is that question of the Honorable Member Ungembe. So the issue of public education, I think you should up that. We should have good school services to talk about these matters every day to avoid also these pseudo-legal people who are taking chances. Some of them, they go door to door, with their volunteers to check people whether they're not involved in an accident. There are sharks, wherever there is an accident, they're already there first to hear and come and want to make a claim on behalf of the victim while they are still unconscious. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying that we need to also to look into that, checker thing. You know, though partly covered, but not. For me, the issue of look, we are members of parliament. We do have a constituency office. I'm not sure to what extent are we using those offices so as to publicize your program or your product so that people get access as quick as possible. Your turnaround, if one lays a claim, what is your turnaround in response? Is it still, I know, but I just want to confirm my ignorance. It's no more 5 years, it's 3 years and so on. There is an improvement, but in terms of the PFMA, there are certain regulations that you need to observe. What is your turnaround in responding when a claim has come without any hitches in that regard? I also buy the idea of the middleman, if it's possible. Let's cut the middleman. What are innovative ways to cut that middleman? And what is the standard practice to pay legal people who represent you? So that we avoid this thing of others are saying it's 7%, others are saying no, it's not more than 20% and so on. What is the standard fee that is supposed to be paid by the victim to those who are representing you as a victim? So that also we talk about this matter on all these platforms so that I know there are some. The legal aid board does come in. I know I come from the Eastern Cape in PE and the surrounding areas. I know certain lawyers were challenged by the law to repay and so on. Sometimes we had to intervene, though we don't have, by that time, we don't have a clear background what is obtaining. So I'm saying you need to talk about this matter. I'm waiting eagerly as a lawmaker to those areas which would want us to intervene. I think that's where I'll be comfortable also. Raise this matter sharply where we need to review and accelerate the change in terms of the act. I know you spoke about the act that is illegal in Section 18. Of the act that they raised. We need to look at those acts so that, and if you can speed up yourself these things that you want us to do, we can stay here and if the process kicks in so that we assist the process so that government does not become a milking cow for our flaws and clumsiness of the law. We need to be very vocal to that. And if that can come also before, I know the ANC, the government party, we are going to a policy conference, so that we shape our minds and the consequences in the direction in which you want us to take URAF. So let us not be apologetic about these matters. My last bite, chairperson. URAF, to what extent are you, in fact, what is your capacity? And to what extent is fraud and corruption? I know here I'm talking of the white collar crime in your department, because you'll find that some people might connive and form a kind of a syndicate within your offices. And to what extent are you dealing with those matters? Any updates to that? I can talk more, but let me take a pause there, Chairperson. Otherwise, I am comfortable with the. With the input, I know he spoke about the fatigue that is there, which needs some change and some training and reskilling and so on. If you can get just a roll-up plan to that, not unless your document does speak to that, because to make a statement is one thing, but the actual plan to implement that, what is your target, your time frames attached to these matters? I did not hear it. Equally to your backlog, you are saying to date you've got a quarter out of a million of backlogs. It has come down from a half to a quarter. It's too huge. You know, it's about, you are seeing of 250,000 backlog, and people are sitting and waiting. So that's why I'm asking your staff, your organogram, your offices. I'm just thinking that you are responding to the city. That's why Uma Mungal comes to talk of the rural, let alone the small towns throughout the country. You know, I'm not getting that. And the hot spots where accidents normally take place, so that one can make a follow up. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will quickly chip in few issues of clarity. Whilst Honorable Suka is still preparing to go to the policy conference. Well, I must say, the presentations both yesterday and today have been extremely, to me, enlightening and productive. Particularly because the presenters and entities spoke quite succinctly to issues of legislation, which in any case is our area of speciality. So hence I'm saying it has been quite enlightening and productive to my side, and perhaps the colleagues as well. Because honestly, perhaps as comment, for one to have to suffer at least 30% body damages before it's eligible to make a claim, it's almost like being semi-garbage. Then reduce the level of semi-garbage before you can eligible be entitled to make a claim. It's quite honestly scandalous and a tragedy at the same time. But perhaps my two questions of clarity would be in relation with your slide 10 now to 2014 continued draft, where you are speaking to reducing the existing backlog. I didn't hear you quite well as to how are you going to reduce it. I would appreciate it if you can speak to that. And on page, I think it's page 12, where you were speaking to expanding the services network to cover the country and under-serviced areas. Perhaps you might have some time frames. By when do you think that would have liked to have achieved this particular task? I would thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Any other questions for members? One left. Okay.
Thanks, Acting Chair. I was once told by a victim of accident that she was referred to the office in the hospital at Rob Ferreira. Then, when she got into that office, she was advised to get a legal rep because she will be paid less if she doesn't have a legal representative. So I just want to know, how true is that? Yeah. That is what I was told. I didn't want to go into that office to get the information myself. So that's why I'm asking this question here, because I thought the offices are there to assist those victims without even going to the legal route. Then one other thing, what is good about having your offices in the constituent offices is that near or in the constituent offices, is that during our constituency period, we are doing this outreach to our communities. I had one, and your office was part of it. So that also assists in ensuring that the communities get information. And one other thing, the slow pace of processing these claims, I think it's because of the legal route. But if it's done directly, like what is happening if there are people who died in an accident, the processing of funeral costs is much quicker. That is what I saw at Nkomaz. So if we can really try our best to do away with this legal route, I think our people will get more service. Thanks.
Manuel, the last one?
That's a question, a small question. Maybe, yeah, thank you. Maybe I'm ignorant because people are talking about offices in their hospitals. Do you have an office in Umtata?
Thank you. Anything to say?
Still learning.
Still learning.
You are taking me.
All right. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Shall we request the department to respond? Chairperson?
No, thank you very much. Once again, ask Mr. Mzilase, but he's obviously free to refer any case to any of the champions of the various part of the
over to
Mr. Bengu.
Interesting questions. I don't have answers to all of them. But this is the situation. That hit and run case Yalubaba in the rural area. We actually do pay on the basis of an affidavit. The difference with a hit and run case is that the prescription period is 2 years. Where we cannot identify the motor vehicle, there are instances where it is possible to ascertain the injuries and say that they are consistent with a hit and run. And on the basis of an affidavit, that claim would be possible. The challenge is for that person to claim. The challenge is for that person to know that he can claim. And I think the challenge is for him to be able to access the Road Accident Fund. And that's our initiative of being all over the country. In fact, I'm going to ask my colleagues to help here because we are getting involved with community radio stations because SABC stations are helpful, but there are instances where there are areas where their footprint doesn't get to. And they are too commercial, whereas with the community stations, you are able to actually get engaged in a discussion which is quite involved and people phoning in, and also using the language of the people where the station is. So our executive for marketing and communications will explain that further later on. In the instance of a sole breadwinner, according to our act, we don't have an intermediary intervention to assist before the claim is settled. We are currently, out of our initiative and ourselves, have started looking at intermediate payments where the merit is clear to basically pay a small amount to assist the families whilst the claim is being processed. But the other thing is we were engaging with SASA. I don't know if you know them. Yes. We were engaging with SASA and building a relationship with them so that if we need food parcels, for kids, for instance, who on a loss of support claim, that they can speed them up if they work with us, because their requirements, we assist in terms of how to process the claim and then basically jump the line, because it's government to government, and get those as an intervention until the claim is settled, if there's a claim on the RAF side. And I know you know our business. I can hear you've been to some of our hospital offices. Let me start by the second one, on the patient that was advised to get a legal representative. There are two things that are possible. The first one, it could be a tout in hospital. We've had instances of touts who pose as RAF. And then they talk to me because we are not easily definable in the hospital. So it is possible that happens. Even some of the nurses are actually being paid by attorneys to scout and doubt for them and bring in accident victims. But if it is our employee, which I do not exclude as well, because as I said earlier, that fraud does not succeed without collusion. Yeah. So if it is, it could have been that case of trying maybe to defraud the company, because I understand these claims, they actually are worth some money to the attorneys. More especially, our employee would be in a position to ascertain the merit and know how the claim could pan out, and easy to be involved in such activity. Fraud is an issue, but I'm hopeful that I would love to believe, so that I sleep better, that in fact it was a tout. And the issue of direct claims, we do encourage people. I think it is with instances of success that we will see the increase in number of people. And the challenges, still with the act that we had, the Road Accident Fund Act, it itself is a problem. It inhibits our ability to process claims quickly. There is a report that is called Statutory Medical Report, which you need from the doctor in order to include as part of the documentation for the claim. Our Act does not allow us to pay for the Statutory Medical Report. And lawyers, they are able to go and give you money and pay for that statutory medical report and then recover the money from. In fact, recently we have just opened another way where we can begin to assist, because there are people who are indigent, who are unable to pay 500 rand for the hospital to get a particular report. You see. So we have started now with this new operating model to begin to pay. Because our act, I think it made sense at the time to say that we cannot pay to prove a case against ourselves. But we know that we are a fund of benefits. We are a social scheme, not insurance. So it is important that we assist the claimants to actually expedite the claim. And the offices in Eastern Cape, we actually have traversed that area. In fact, some of the initiatives have been happening there, and it's just that I don't have the pictures and the names of the places, but I've been to quite a few as well myself, personally, in the Eastern Cape. Mr. Suga, public education is important and should be continuous. And as you said, the initiative around community stations is to extend the way of communicating with our markets. In fact, wherever there are a lot of people congregated, these days we go in and put in our exhibition stands and bring in our guys with their laptops. They can even check your claim for you. They can do, we've been to places in Northwest, and some of them, the names I can't even pronounce, because of this initiative. The challenge, though, is that when you do that, you also need capacity. And in certain instances, you also need connectivity. So, but we tend to, in when we went there, it was just for one weekend. And you used to call the FM. People who turned out there were more than 25,000. And the queue that was an RAF marquee was about 11,000 people. Because we had said to them, even people whose claims had prescribed, we just said anyone who lost someone in a road accident should come. Because sometimes it happens that the father dies, the mother is alive, and she thinks 3 years has expired, therefore it has prescribed. Whereas if there were children who were born in that marriage, who were dependents of that deceased, their cover extends for a period until they reach 18 years. They come of age. They can still claim loss of support. That also talks to your issue that you raised around the 30% bodily impairment. There are other heads of damages that you can claim on. Loss of income, loss of support, and so on and so forth, past and future medicals. So the bodily impairment was specifically to deal with the issue of of general damages, because it was a problem. It was eroding the fund. It was sorry money, basically. A person gets a whiplash and then he goes and he claims. He says he gets headaches and then he goes and he claims. So that's where the prevalence of fraud was. So it was important that injury should be serious for you to claim. You know that those of you who are doctors, you can never disprove when a person says he feels pain here and he points to a body part. And if there is no scientific measuring device of assisting you to know that that is a genuine injury, then it's difficult for us. But there are other doors other than the 30% bodily impairment, which we allow in cases of, there is a test they call the narrative test. For instance, even if you are not bodily impaired, but if you are a model and you lose your nose, you wouldn't be able to earn money after that because you'd be disfigured. So then you use a narrative test to cover those. That is based from legislation that is actually used in other countries like Australia, for instance. So it's something that is common. Constituency offices, and I'm happy because Joseph was here, will take this up immediately. And I think this also, Dr. Dutoy, extends to, it allows us to engage with stakeholders as well, to educate people around RAPSA once it happens. And so even during the lobbying to build the case for the no-fault system. So this is another level and element that will allow us access to the communities that we serve. Because we do even go to churches now, and it was the advice from the chair there that said, it's the priests and the reverends who bury people who die in the accident. So go and find them there so that you are able to assist. So we do get involved, and sometimes it's embarrassing to see RAF clothing at a funeral, I know, but we're trying to provide a service. We're trying to demystify the fund and bring it closer to the people it's supposed to serve. And besides your constituency offices, we also have what transport developed, they call them road safety councils in the area that we have actually trained in all the provinces on the basics of the Road Accident Fund Act. And also they have some material that shows where our offices are. And we usually work with them because we give them preference to listen to them when they bring in the claims and the claimants. And the accidents that we spoke about, which were happening in Soweto, for instance, on that street, it was brought by one of the safety council members. You asked about the standard fee. Where lawyers are involved, usually that I think though the assumptions of law is that the agreement between two people is actually based on what they agree on. So even with the issues of the contingency fee, it's that that relationship is a protected privileged relationship that we cannot interfere in, you see, except to intervene through education to claimants to say, you don't have to give up half of your claim because, but there is also maybe justifiable belief on them to say, I stand a better chance of getting more if I go through an attorney. But the jury is out whether that is true. And now we actually are forming an inspectorate that will make sure that on direct claims we circle judiciously and based on the precedence as if the person was represented. Because we know that within our organization there could be instances of people who under offer, hoping that there will still be a counter. And if you are a direct claimant, you don't even want to get involved in horse trading. So as I said, we're changing the culture of the organization because we are a highly litigious environment where we were employing attorneys as claims handlers in the business. So that is the change that is also taking place, the fourth leg of that strategy that we put there.
Backlog. Reminding about the backlog.
Yes, I'm going through them. There is plan for change and then backlog. Fraud, plan for change and backlog. Thanks for offering to assist us to speed up this legislation. And we will take you up on that. And I'm happy that transport is represented here. At least we know that you will be supporting us in terms of the initiative. We will explain to you in the long title and short title of the Act the mischief we are trying to redress with the legislation that we want to bring about. And also, I think the big one, though, would be the RAPS bill. And that one will need to be sold all over the country. And then we'll need to be speeded up as well. On issues of fraud, and as I said, that it is still an issue. In the insurance industry, usually they provide 10% of their turnover for fraud or fraudulent issues. In our environment, unfortunately, we haven't done studies that show us the levels of prevalence. We do certain estimates on that. But we actually have been quite successful in many instances to get people convicted on who were trying to defraud the fund. Unfortunately, it's not in this presentation, but we have had quite a few successes, a lot, in fact. And the big ones, though, have been the advocates who themselves have been defrauding the fund in terms of the hours that they claim to have worked. In other instances, it was so glaringly obvious that not even in a lifetime would you have been able to work for such a long time. So some of those, six of them were struck off the roll in Pretoria. There are other syndicates in KZN, for instance. Unfortunately, for us to succeed in conviction, we can't disclose that until conviction happens. But we also work with the NPA as well, and we actually fund them so that the prosecution is done quickly and they assist with the investigation. So we hand over a lot of cases to the NPA to assist the fund in terms of fraud. And Andre maybe will add on that. The plan for change I was checking here in the annual strategy, there should be write up on the plan in terms of the future, in almost a better detail than what I touched on. And also the backlog over and above that, Andre will come in and add. I think I covered everything.
Thank you, Chair. In responding to the questions about reaching out to the rural areas, we've just signed up with 25 community radio stations, and they will be carrying out our educational messages and in different languages. So for your level of comfort, yes, we are already talking to you, and we've committed that we will be talking to our people in the language that they understand. We are also talking to the community newspapers, because people want to read, they're comfortable reading their own newspaper, they're comfortable reading about stories that affect them directly in their own communities, and they're comfortable to read in their own language. So we are in the process of finalizing a deal with some of the community newspapers. We've also just launched a concept called RAF on the Road. And what we are trying to achieve is that you need to find us when you're looking for us. And the idea is that people can actually come to us directly and lodge claims. We've got one activity now that's here in Cape Town next week on the 24th. Mitchell's Plain, Lenderhardt Hall. But one of the idea that the Cape Town office has come up with is that they'll be busing people in. So they'll go to Nyanga, they'll go to Kukulik, and they'll get the buses to come and bring people who have got questions for RAF. Some of them have got, they want to know what the status of their claim is, and some of them want to lodge claims with us. So we've launched this RAF on the Road, and it's going to be national very soon. We had one in Joburg 2 weeks ago, and it works very well. But we will be reaching out even to some of the rural areas. Yeah. But there's more. I mean, one item that I nearly forgot. Everybody watches football. Somebody is a Chiefs fan, somebody is a Pirates fan. We've just done one activation, the last derby, Chiefs Pirates game, and I'm sure if you watched it, you might have seen RAF on the screen, where we were actually giving the people our number, our call center number. And after that game, we actually got a lot of calls from people wanting to know, based on the fact that they saw us on TV. So we're looking at all these opportunities and platforms where we can get to talk to the people and allow them to interact directly with us.
Maybe just in terms of attacking the backlog, just a general comment that it's a careful balancing act between the cash available and the backlog, the offers that you are making. Committee members would remember since 2005, on three occasions the Road Accident Fund physically ran out of cash, where we had come to National Treasury. In 2006, we requested $2.7 billion, which we got. 2008, we had to redo it again. So it's a balance of how many offers you're making and then not to run out of cash. What we've done is to, on the represented claims, which is more than 90% of the claims, we're inviting the plaintiff attorney. So what we've done last year, we've written letters to the top 50 plaintiff attorneys and to all the law societies, basically inviting them to come to us where they feel that they've got sufficient evidence for us to settle that claim, to sit down with us in a one-on-one meeting before it goes to trial in order to save legal costs, to settle it. We must say that it has been successful in certain instances, but less than 5% of them actually responded, confirming that they're more interested in dragging out the case closer to trial date. On the direct claims, this is where you can have one-on-one discussions with the people. What we've done, we have been having separate departments, but we're re-resourcing them. We're upskilling the resourcing of those departments in order to make, let's say, a fast-track settlement process to the direct claimants. What we'll do from a cash flow point of view is also to allocate, you know, separate cash resources for that. And then internally, as the CEO said, we have implemented a peer review system so that to make sure that we don't give a bad offer that the person will run to a lawyer. We are doing a peer review system to say that if I've made you an offer of $2 million, given your future career opportunities, it is a reasonable offer. And we've also implemented a performance management system. We've always had it, but it's just that we formalized it in this last year with very specific targets to each claims handler, dealing with specific categories of claims. We'll be taking action if they don't reach the target.
Thank you very much. I think that the presentation is good. It gives us enough information to understand what the strategy is all about and how it relates to your mandate. It also gives us clear information in terms of the work that has to be done by the portfolio committee. I must, however, indicate again as EDG that when an entity like the Road Accident Fund points out that there is a need for amendment of the legislation, I usually get butterflies in my stomach. And I'm not a very courageous person. Honestly, I confront issues. So it is an unusual sign in me when an entity says there will be a need for legislation to be amended. Then from where I sit, I get stomach butterflies. It's an unusual thing. and it is happening because from where we sit at the portfolio committee, we have identified that the department moves very, very slowly on policy matters. A practical example is that the department understands the unity that deals with policy is understanding. Understanding means underperformance. Number two, the department has taken more than 4 years just to deal with one policy, scholar transport. We have RTMC last year raising the issue of the need to amend the yesterday we had the Road Traffic Infringement Agency again saying that we would be able to carry out our mandate if the Act was to be amended. Today we have the Road Accident Fund again talking about the need for legislation. And I am hoping that you will take the message back to the department and raise that issue sharply with the unit that deals with legislation within the department. From where we sit, we think that that unit is underperforming. The second issue is that that I want to raise, in addition to the work that you are doing, the Road Accident Fund, on community engagement. I'm the president of SAM, the South African National Civic Organization. We have associate organizations, and one of them is the South African Commuters Organization. It has got a membership of 90,000 people. Those are commuters. Most of the victims, the taxi industry, the buses, are members of the South African Commuters Organization. And again, interacting with that organization, Bob Sangwe, the president of the South African Commuters Organization, would assist in educating communities on how to utilize your services, particularly people that are from the poor background. I also appreciate the fact that you have appointed a community radio station. It would be nice to have a radio talk show so that we can send the correct message to the people. Because in most cases, the message doesn't get across because there isn't enough time given to talk about a particular issue. And as a result, people would not then get an opportunity of appreciating the service that is there and also of understanding the processes. I think it is a very good initiative. I also have attended two mass funerals where the Road Accident Fund was represented. Not only in terms of having provided, responded to the issue of the funeral, but also present in terms of standing up and actually talk and be on the list of speakers to talk about the services, how they intervene. And the community appreciates that. Because if there are 19 courses, and then you have an organization that was moved to the scene of the accident to pick up those bodies, and you have that that organization represented and speaking, then you then appreciate the reaction from the community. That has had a very, very positive impact. I attended the mass funeral in the center of the bus victims. The role played by the road accident fund was very, very appreciated. And what I think I did not hear from your presentation is that the road accident fund doesn't live in a space. It is in South Africa. It is a government entity, and the government has identified three challenges that this country is faced with: inequality, poverty, and job creation. Now, a person who doesn't understand community development would ask the question, our mandate is excellent. How can we then be expected to respond to issues of inequality, of poverty, of job creation? I have a community development background. I can see opportunities in poverty reduction. I can see opportunities in job creation. And I can see what is it that you can contribute in dealing with issues of inequality. The victims that you contribute to their funerals are buried in coffins. There is another government program of removing alien clan, and some of the people that are removing those things remove certain trees, and they use that raw material to manufacture cotton. And we are encouraging them to form themselves into cooperatives, because it is against government programs to help poor communities to organize themselves and form themselves into cooperatives. And I think that there is a window opportunity there. The second one is that not difficult to make this up. Not difficult. And maybe on our side we can look at the legislation part of that as a way of preventing accidents, particularly those that involve market pedestrians, and see how that could assist to ensure visibility of pedestrians. But this also, if it is produced by cooperatives in rural areas, it would create jobs. But at the same time, it would impact
positively is reducing the accident. You said of importing very easy, straight stitch pair. Even the hem, which is the longer, a blind machine to do a blind stitch. So it's a straightforward thing. That would then assist in saying that the road accident fund is also contributing and relating to the three challenges that have been identified by the government. The last one, I was looking at the number of on the slide where you are talking about the slide. Okay. It is true that Gauteng is densely populated, but it is a province in terms of square kilometers smaller than KZN and Eastern Cape. Now, if you look at the services that are provided, you also look at the vastness of the province. Gauteng can have many hospitals as compared to the Eastern Cape, but in terms of the size of the province and then making those services accessible, then it would, if you look at it from a community development perspective, you would then look at the local municipalities to provide these services. Of course, it's a very vast and a very poor a province, meaning that it is difficult even for people to move from where they are to where the services provide them. So to have field case managers that are two in the Eastern Cape and a case manager that is one case manager, to me means that urban areas are getting better services than rural areas, and that speaks directly to inequality. I will stop there and then I will hand over to Honorable Luka to then chair the meeting on when you deal with RCMC, because I am now going to a briefing, because I will be chairing an economic transformation cluster meeting at 2. The chair of the economic transformation cluster is not in, and I am sending in to be informed the meeting with the House Chairperson to brief me on that responsibility. Thank you very much for a good presentation. We will give you the support and where the abortionist will work with you to try and improve the problem. Thank you very much.
Can we take a 2 minute comfort break? Just 2 minutes and press something. All these ones, press something.
You are at liberty to make a follow-up from that. Can we do take that approach? You'll make us 10 to 15 minutes at least, so that we hear those areas that you feel strongly we must raise. Without much ado, ladies and gentlemen, they will introduce themselves quickly, because I don't know now the leader of the delegation.
But I think women are in the driving seat, of which we do appreciate. When I'm hoping the number, my board, and then the other. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Over to you, the leader of the delegation, and you should straight away.
Thank you very much, Chief President. My name is Kushan from
your mic, please. Look at on the top side of you. There's two buttons in front of you. The one top.
I was saying my name is Kushan Komedi. I was introduced to the committee about a month ago as the CFO of the RTMC. I'm joined by one of my executive members in the office of the CEO, Ms. Rufio Mungalu, who will share an engagement on the question time. I think we sent an apology for our CEO, as there was an met yesterday, and he couldn't really be here at the finish late. So that apology was tendered. The issue that we would like to cover in 10 minutes is, one, the request for additional funding. The LTMC, to me as the CFO, is like no longer an ICU. Somebody who is had an operation and now they're taking over an upset. And it's just feeling a lot of different things. And unless we get funding, the year is going to be as difficult as driving on a gravel road with potholes. What we proposed when we wrote to the minister was that we require an additional 105 million. And the reason for that is that you see we've listed the 10 key reasons why we require that amount. Currently, what's happening is that with National Traffic Police, the budget was not allocated to us. It was allocated to SANLAW. And SANLAW refuses to pay us that money. So we can't take our funding, and we are currently taking our funding and paying for the interview. We then need whatever we had budgeted for the year for core projects is now being funded by private sector is our biggest partner. And we went to Avis, we went to Pick and Pay, we went to EM24. For Easter, they partnered with us, and we were able to make our core functions as I said, in making sure that in every province, police are there, visible. Another company sponsored us with helicopters that were on major highways, liaising directly with the police on the ground to say that that vehicle that is breaking the law. So the issue now is if private sector can come to the party so quickly, and we are a child of a very, very big mother, why do we feel so neglected? That is the issue I want to leave with the portfolio committee. That is the question that I'm asking myself, where I was hired to have funding in the schedule 3A, not 3B, so I can't actually do anything from trying to source funding. So now I'm in that territory. I need to find funding within the confines of CSMA. It makes it impossible. It's impossible. So our staff morale is at the bottom, besides their own issues with the history of the organization. You've seen there was a strike. What were the issues? Funding. So we need to deal with that. And at portfolio committee meetings, when you go and engage, please, the issues of funding in the RTMC. When you speak to the CEO of Pick and Pay, he doesn't understand why you're asking that kind of money. But at the end of the day, he's able to release 40 cars so that we can do the enforcement. So that is the one message. The second message we wanted to allude to was allegations that we made yesterday by the RCIA with regard to issues of the Act, which we have mentioned on this platform that needs to be amended. But we've got to only say that what is our understanding.